Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred is also the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. And Fred, thanks for joining me in studio at the BEL cabin.
Great to be here.
We're going through the Creation Magazine, published by Creation Ministries International. This is a good glossy magazine.
Absolutely. Creationontheweb.com.
Yeah, that's right. Can we start with this article about Neanderthals? Now, some evolutionists want us to believe that they were pre-humans.
Pre-humans. Neanderthals over the last 100 years have actually evolved quite a bit.
They have, because now we know they're rather sophisticated.
That's right. And there are some informed evolutionists who are intellectually honest enough to admit that they're Homo sapiens, but you have some that are still clinging to this idea that they're hoping that they're our ancestor and they're trying to make a monkey out of a man. And really, Neanderthals were just Homo sapiens.
Yeah. And in this story, which people could find online, it's a Reuters story from September 2007, but they found fossil teeth of Neanderthals. And they realized that they practiced dental hygiene.
That's right. They cleaned their teeth with a stick.
Yeah. And this is another example of 100 such examples that they were human beings. They buried their dead. They had a human social society. They were human beings.
They used jewelry. They made cave paintings. And as you mentioned earlier, they buried their dead. And we found the hyoid bone that proved that they are capable of speech, which was really a surprise to the evolutionists. Maybe it wasn't a surprise to them. Sometimes you wonder if they know the truth. But
yeah, exactly. So anyway, another argument against the theory, the wild hope that men evolved from animals. We didn't. We were made in God's image and likeness. And therefore, we should trust God and honor him and obey him. And that's really what I think evolutionists, that's the part they don't like. They want to be free from any obligation to our creator God.
And that's right. And in fact, the very next article is just another example of a kid killing other kids in a high school. And he gave evolution as a justification for his actions, just like Harrison Klebold did in the diaries and the little home videos that they made. Mm-hmm. And he said, one of the quotes he said was, "Today the process of natural selection is totally misguided. It is time to put natural selection and survival of the fittest back on track. I, as a natural selector, will eliminate all who I see unfit, who disgraces the human race and failures of natural selection."
Wow.
So it shows you where worldviews have a consequence.
Yeah, there, and that is a theme among those who want to murder their neighbors. They think they're doing natural selection a favor.
That's right. And we didn't have these problems 100 years ago, Bob, before evolution was foisted upon us.
Yeah, there was crime, but not the epidemic of crime that we see in a godless world that our modern human culture has become. Okay, so now how about elephants? Elephants are cool. There's an article in here about the way they communicate with one another. And, you know, evolutionists say that chimps are closest to humans, and so that's why chimps are so intelligent. Turns out elephants are really intelligent.
Yeah, they're finding out that they're extremely intelligent, perhaps more intelligent than chimps.
Mm-hmm. And the way they communicate is so cool, through a low-frequency rumble that they make through their trunks, and it turns out that that rumble travels through the ground as a seismic wave. That's cool.
That is cool. Is it kind of like listening for a train on a train track? So if you hear something rumbling, you get out of the way because the elephant's on the way.
Yeah, that's right. And elephants, now they know, can identify one another long distance through these rumbles to know whether it's a friend or a stranger who's making a call. That's really cool.
That is cool. Bob, do elephants have the tail of a cedar tree?
No, they have this tiny little squiggly thing of a tail.
I was kind of wondering, because it said in my Bible in the margins that Behemoth was an elephant.
Yeah,
they
right.
They didn't know what this thing was, so they put in the margins an elephant.
Right. And that was undoubtedly an evolutionist editor of a version of the Bible. The Bible describes dinosaurs.
Absolutely.
And these are not Behemoth and Leviathan. They are not elephants. The one doesn't have a tail like a cedar tree.
Yeah, and that was the description given in the Bible.
Right, exactly.
Tail of a cedar tree. Okay, an elephant. If you've ever seen the elephant's tail, like you said, it's...
Yeah, and this creature could stand in a roaring river and not be moved. It has scales that a sword can't pierce. You know, all these descriptions.
Bones like bars of iron.
Yeah, descriptions of a dinosaur. Pretty cool. All right, Fred Williams, the next article I'd like us to look at, we're going through Creation Magazine, is about the size of stars, supersized stars, with the discovery of two of the most massive stars ever found.
Yep. And one of the scientists says, I didn't think stars that big could exist. They should blow themselves to pieces.
Yeah. And that was John Brown of University of Glasgow in the UK. And it turns out that they want us to believe, they being atheists, want us to believe that scientists have figured out how stars were formed and how the universe was made, the Big Bang. But if you ask them, and this is admitted by atheist cosmologists, which came first, galaxies or stars, they don't know. Now, if you don't know which came first, stars or galaxies, galaxies are made of stars. You don't know which formed first. That should give us a clue that they don't know how these things formed. They don't know how one star could form. The problems with star formation are enormous because as the gas, supposedly, out there in space, as it condensed, it would increase the heat, the pressure, and it would blow itself apart. And there are so many serious problems with stars forming. They don't know how it formed. And the ones they find, they think, wow, why is it like that? We would have never guessed there could be stars like that.
Yeah, and you know, there's a growing list of scientists who, a lot of them are atheists, that realize there's so many holes with the Big Bang, they know they need to come up with another theory. So go to cosmologystatement.org, and there's a long list of scientists who've signed this, saying that we got to stop coming up with these ad hoc explanations like dark matter and dark energy and all these other phenomenon that haven't been observed to try to explain what we see in the universe. Now, it doesn't match a naturalistic origin.
The 31,000 scientists in America who signed the petition project against global warming, that there's not evidence that man has created global warming and that it's a scam. That's 31,000 scientists, including 9,000 PhDs, which is pretty cool. But there's not as many as have signed and publicly stated the Big Bang is filled with holes, but it's a growing number of astrophysicists and physicists who are saying, astronomers, that this Big Bang theory is riddled with holes. It's obviously not true.
And the observations are absolutely contradicting it, like quantum redshift problem. And just briefly what that is as we look out from our, basically from our planet, but essentially our galaxy, we're seeing galaxies line up on concentric circles. So it's kind of like looking at a dartboard. And as you go farther out, these galaxies are lining up on a circle. You go farther out more, and they line up on a concentric circle. What that proves is that our galaxy is the center of the universe, and there's no way a Big Bang can explain this phenomenon. According to the Big Bang, you shouldn't be able to tell that you're the center of the universe. This is enormous evidence for design. It's astonishing. It's just another great evidence of the Bible and a theme that we've touched on often, that God thwarts naturalistic explanations. There's no way you can explain that in a naturalistic fashion.
All right. So thank you, Fred Williams, webmaster for Creation Research Society. Now there's an article in here about a shrimp. But this shrimp packs quite a punch.
Oh, man. This is my favorite article, Bob.
All right.
It's called a mantis shrimp. Now, Bob, this isn't the kind of shrimp that you grill out on your barbecue. In fact, it's not really a shrimp. It's a marine crustacean, but it's not. They call it a mantis shrimp because it kind of looks like a shrimp and it kind of looks like a mantis. But What this thing looks like, it's kind of hard to explain, but, you know, I was trying to think of an analogy, and I know this probably dates a lot of our listeners, but if you saw the second Star Trek movie and that
second
little...
Second Star Trek movie. I'm trying to remember back.
The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, yeah.
And that
that
little thing that crawled into Chekhov's ear. That's kind of what
gross.
This thing looks like.
Gross.
Except this thing's probably even more wicked looking.
Yeah.
It's, I'm a saltwater aquarium enthusiast, and... When you get into that hobby, you learn real quick about the mantis shrimp because you don't want one in your tank.
You don't want a mantis shrimp in your saltwater aquarium.
No, and some people end up with them by accident because a lot of times to try to speed up the process to get your tank ready so that, you know, you got to build up, you know, the bioequilibrium in the tank. For example, you want to have the bacteria to build up to eat the nitrates that is produced by the waste of the fish. So you need this equilibrium so that the fish survive. Because if you plunk a fish into a new saltwater tank, he's going to die within a week, if even that. So my tank took about 6 months to cycle. Well, one of the ways you speed that up is you buy live rock. So people go and they buy their live rock. Well, a lot of times...
Live rock.
It's called live rock. You buy it from... And sometimes they call it cured rock if they've had it in the aquarium shop for a while to make sure it doesn't have things like the mantis shrimp in it, because here's the problem. I had a friend who bought some live rock, and actually he brought it up from the Gulf of Mexico in his trunk. Okay. These things are incredibly durable. So he put this rock in his mother's tank, and she called about a month later and said that, you know, she lost a fish, and, you know, these fish aren't cheap that you buy in a saltwater tank.
Oh, wow.
And then another week goes by and she lost another fish. So he came over one night and thought, well, he's going to try to figure out what's going on. So he spent the night. Well, in the meantime, he heard some clicking noises.
Clicking noise.
It's like the sharpening
of their shrimp.
Sharpening their claws. And sure enough, she had a mantis shrimp hiding in one of those live rocks, and his unsuspecting fish swim by that rock. Boom. This thing has a catapult mechanism.
It punches its prey.
And then it has sushi for dinner. Enormous force. It's about the equivalent of a .22 pistol. I'm not sure if that's what he gives in this article, but it's an enormous amount of pressure. There's a nickname among saltwater enthusiasts. It's called the thumb splitter. So you want to be real careful if you're putting your hand in your aquarium and you got a mantis shrimp. And they're also very intelligent. When he took this rock out of his tank, I mean, the thing was hard to kill. He ran water over this live rock. Oh. He finally got the thing to come out, and he impaled it with his shish kebab.
Oh, no. These things, let's see, they have this club-like limb that reaches a top speed of about 20 meters per second. That's like about 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, roughly, yep.
And a peak acceleration of 10,000 Gs. Now, 1 G is like an astronaut experiencing gravity. And at, 10 Gs?
Is where a fighter pilot will pass out.
He'll pass out. So this shrimp, he's not really a shrimp, but he's a crustacean. This mantis shrimp's punch, his club-like limb, produces a force of about 10,000 Gs. And if you have one in your saltwater tank, it can bust your tank.
It could. That's actually pretty rare, but there are cases where that's happened. He mentions one here, and I looked it up on the internet, and there was a quarter-inch tank, glass tank, which is a pretty thick tank.
Quarter-inch.
Yeah, that shattered a tank in England. It doesn't happen often, but because they hide. This picture in this magazine is fantastic because I've never seen a picture this good because you can never see these little guys. They hide, and you know, they come out at night to do their hunting, but a lot of times they just hide in a little crevice in a rock, and they wait for something to swim by, then they club it. So some saltwater enthusiasts will keep it in their tank, and they'll just make sure they keep it well fed so it doesn't eat their fish. Mm. But anyways, this thing shows remarkable design because in order to do this, they've discovered a catapult mechanism that works on a screw, and then there's the thing that tightens its muscles, a hinge, and then there's like a saddle to keep, you know, to make this apparatus work. So when the muscles tense up, this thing just doesn't go flying.
The saddle, it has a special shape that engineers use, and it's called a hyperbolic paraboloid. And it has the ability to absorb a tremendous amount of energy. And if you want to think of what it looks like a Pringles potato chip, a Pringles chip. And this is the only creature in the entire animal kingdom that uses this special design shape as a spring to launch its club to whack its prey.
That's right. It's a great example of intelligent design because how can this thing evolve step by step? You need all these pieces in place from the beginning.
Yeah, you need the spring, right, for the catapult to work. You need muscles to load it, and you need a latch mechanism to release it. And so what? You got like 90% of it, but it doesn't work. There's no latch mechanism. It's not going to help this creature survive. It needs all the parts of the special mechanism functioning to give it a survival advantage.
And there's something else it does that I wasn't aware of until I read this article. It has a double wallop, a double punch. And the second part of that punch actually is going to be related to, believe it or not, the global flood. We might get to that if we get a chance. But that second punch is a process and effect called cavitation. So what that is basically when water turns from a liquid to gas, essentially vapor, these little bubbles have a tremendous amount of energy that they're all exploding at once is when you get water wrapped with a high velocity. And this produces that effect. And so this cavitation effect also is a huge punch to whatever it's trying to wipe out. When I was reading about this on the internet, that was the principle of depth charges. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just that the depth charge against the submarine would blow up on the hull of a submarine. As long as it was close, that explosion would cause a cavitation effect. And this cavitation power is remarkable. When they released water from Glen Canyon Dam, the cavitation effect, it ate through tons of their concrete spillways.
Right.
If I remember, it was like a 38-foot crater that this thing created, and they had to figure out how to fix. They had a year to fix this thing, but they learned a lot about cavitation at that time. And what they did to solve the problem is they injected air into the water, and it helps reduce the cavitation effect. Props are designed on boats to combat the cavitation effect. If you didn't have your prop designed properly, water cavitation would eat it apart. And how it ties into a global flood is it shows how water can carve through solid rock like butter. Mm-hmm. And that's what cavitation can do.
And that's the flood creating all these water gaps all around the world, about 1,000 water gaps that are virtually inexplicable apart from the massive forces of the flood. There are water gaps where there should be no water gap, where water eroded a channel through this mountain of cliffs when it could have just wandered around the mountains, just like, half a mile to the south, there could just would have wandered right around. But no, it went this way.
Yeah, right through the middle, because it can cut through it like butter if this cavitation is in effect. And it's amazing that this mantis shrimp has that second effect, that when this catapult is engaged in that action, it also causes this cavitation, a depth charge its prey.
Talk to another aspect of this mantis shrimp, this crustacean, because its favorite food are these snails. And what it has to do is it breaks their shell. And so some people say, well, if God created them, how could it be that he would give them the ability to kill snails? So wouldn't that be mean? And in this article, they talk about snails and invertebrates and insects, that the Bible never describes those kinds of creatures as having a soul. You know, the Hebrew words for soul and a soulish creature. I don't speak Hebrew, but words like nefesh, chaya, nefesh, a soul. And they point out that there is good scientific evidence that invertebrates do not feel pain. And I know Cheryl and I, the few times in our life when we've boiled lobsters, you got these live lobsters, right? You got this big tub of boiling water on the stove. You get the kids around. You throw the lobsters in and they start screaming. And the lobsters are not screaming. It's the air being released through their shells. But it sounds like they're screaming. Yeah.
I just came up with a good idea. You know how people for the eating tasty animals? I mean,
people for the ethical treatment of animals. Yeah.
When these Make-A-Wish kids go on these fishing expeditions and these morons are out there splashing in the water to try to scare the fish away, I wonder if we put them in our boiling water, they can try to
try to swim away. Yeah. Scientists have shown, for example, with insects, that they have no ability to feel pain. Like they'll take a dragonfly and curl its own abdomen its tail into its mouth parts. And the dragonfly starts eating its tail in its abdomen. It eats its own abdomen before it realizes, uh-oh, I'm dying.
Yeah.
I'm eating my own tail in my abdomen. So obviously it's not feeling pain.
Exactly.
And the same appears to be true with invertebrates, generally invertebrates. And so these creatures certainly could have eaten one another even before the fall.
That's right. It's
and
not yeah,
bacteria it's... could be eaten, and good bacteria and so on, and helping digest our food and in the stomachs of all kinds of animals. So, yeah, bacteria and insects could die. They don't have a soul. But before the fall of Adam and Eve, nothing with a soul would have died.
That's right. And like you said, with the bacteria, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship, and symbiosis is something we've talked about before that evolutionists would have a real hard time explaining how that could occur. In fact, Darwin said that would be a prediction of his theory, that if it happened a lot, his theory wouldn't be true. And yet we found literally thousands of examples of symbiotic relationships. And one of them is this bacteria we talked about in the to help you cycle your tank.
Exactly. Now, Fred, I want to let the audience know something that's happening Monday. Monday, June 2nd, we are taking a road trip. It's an American Rights Life road trip to Billings, Montana, to help them in their personhood signature effort. So I want to encourage you, it's not too late. If you want to join Cal Zastro, Jason Troyer, I'm going, Bob Enyart, and many others were caravanning from Denver, Colorado, up to Billings, Montana. You can call American Rights to Life, 1-888-888-ARTL, and say, hey, I'd like to reserve a place on the American Rights to Life road trip, or perhaps you could donate a tank of gas for $80. Or you can pay sponsor someone to go who can't afford to go for $100 and say, I'd like to have a part in helping Montana get personhood on the ballot in November, because they've got a month to go. So please come on out if at all possible. Okay. So, Fred, that was my plug for the American Right to Life road trip.
That sounds like a lot of fun, Bob.
It's really going to be great. Now, the next article has to do with, it's not biology or astronomy, it's from the world of archaeology. And in the Bible, there's this guy mentioned. He's not a major figure, but he's a servant of the king of Babylon. His name is Nebo-Sarsekim. Nebo-Sarsekim, he's just some guy mentioned. Of 1,000 people in the Bible, he's mentioned. And there's an article about him in this current issue of Creation Magazine. This is cool.
It is really cool, because what they found is that through archaeology is, what is this, Bob, a ring that they found with an insignia of with his name on it.
This is actually, it's a receipt. It's a receipt, a clay tablet, and it has the details of a donation he made in gold to the temple in Babylon. And it's got a number of, comments. It's describing his gift, the gift from Nebo-Sarsekim. And what's interesting, I'd like to quote this Dr. Irving Finkel, a peculiar name. Dr. Irving Finkel from the British Museum, an expert in archaeology, he said this: "This is a fantastic discovery, a world-class find. If Nebo-Sarsekim existed, which other lesser figures in the Old Testament also existed? A throwaway detail in the Old Testament turns out to be accurate and true. I think it means that the whole of the narrative of the book of Jeremiah takes on a new kind of power." And he's not a believer. He's a atheist archaeologist.
And what's amazing about this is every time we find something like this in archaeology, the way the word is on the archaeological artifact, it always matches the Bible, whereas it hardly ever matches historians. Contemporary historians are roughly contemporary. For example, Herodotus. This R.D. Wilson did a comparison of a lot of archaeological studies finds and found that very seldom was Herodotus or the Library of Alexandria, very seldom were these sources correct. The Bible was correct every single time, right down to the
every time,
jot and tittle.
1,000 times over. So if somebody was writing after the events, you know, after the time of Jeremiah, centuries later, and centuries after Nebuchadnezzar, they could be expected to get Nebuchadnezzar's name right, but not a list of his servants.
That's right. And because here we have a great example.
Yeah, they didn't have the internet. They didn't have CD-ROM, you know, databases on their computers. Yet 1,000 details have been corroborated by archaeologists going way back to the book of Genesis in the time of Abraham. So the Bible is corroborated, the story of the Bible. So if the story is true, people should give its message more credibility and consider its message seriously because the story of the Bible is true.
And this is just another example. When you think of a Bible apologetics and, you know, the famous verse for apologetics, always be ready to give a defense for the hope that is in you. I like the verse right before it where it says, don't be afraid of their threats nor be troubled. And the reason I like that is because when I first got into this, Bob, maybe about, I don't know, 15 years ago where I really took an interest in the Bible, I was worried about their threats and was troubled because they would bring up things like, Jericho, the archaeology contradicts the Bible. Well, as you study the Bible and you study all the aspects of it, in the archaeology, you find out the archaeology, for example, of Jericho fits the Bible perfectly, but you get skeptics and critics who hate the Bible and they'll make things up and they'll twist things and they'll find a way to twist this, Bob, mm-hmm. but just remember, don't be afraid of their threats to be trouble because the Bible is always, never going to let you down. And archaeology is just one of many aspects of it. You know, I mentioned Jericho and how all the fine details of finding that occurred during the harvest. Well, what do we find? We find jars full of grain that prove that they were in the harvest. Wait a minute. Why are the jars full of grain? That's a valuable commodity.
Yeah, if the city God was
said,
sacked.
God said, do not take the grain. All these fine details,
right.
Walls falling down flat.
If the city of Jericho was sacked by its enemies, they would have cleared out the storehouses.
Absolutely.
But they left the storehouses filled with grain because God said, don't take the supplies, leave them there.
That's right.
And that's what they did. And subsequently, in later generations, the city was, they built on top of Jerusalem.
That's right.
And even a prophecy there was fulfilled that the man who built it lost his son.
That's right.
So, hey, Fred, we're about out of time. I wanted to talk about this dinosaur they found.
Oh, and I wanted to talk about that bat that they think is related to a horse.
Well,
I mean, all these silly ideas.
Bats are closer to a horse than a cow is.
Yeah.
Evolutionists are saying that.
Oh, the cartoon theory.
And this dinosaur, 125 feet long, was found fossils with fish, turtles, crocodiles, all kinds of reptiles, all jumbled up in the same fossil graveyard, all buried in water. And this thing was 48 tons, and it's buried, what, as the waters gradually rose?
They all decided to go there and all die together.
Right, yeah. It's there's so much evidence of a worldwide catastrophe of the flood. But we could do this again on another show, if that's all right with you.
Oh, definitely.
All right, so let's keep this Creation Magazine marked. And Lord willing, we'll continue with these episodes of Real Science Friday, which are a great joy to do. Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thanks, Bob, for having me. It's a lot of fun.
Sure thing. EvolutionFairyTale.com is Fred's website. Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. What a fabulous school. Fred Williams has kids who go there, right, Fred?
I do. Ryan and Abigail.
Ryan and Abigail.
It's a great school.
Our dear little ones go there. We also homeschool. Maranatha is a great school. May God bless you.